American librarians operate under a code of ethics. What happens when the freedom to read collides with a particular political moment? You're listening to SDPB's In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Librarians is a documentary film that explores the push to ban books and criminalize librarians. The film comes to PBS Independent Lens on February 9th. SDPB is hosting public screenings across the state in February and March. I talked with filmmaker Kim A. Snyder about the project.
Well, it started over four years ago, in the fall of 21, when I learned that in Texas, there was a list that became known as the Krauss List of 850 books that a state representative had issued, a list of 850 books that school librarians should review their shelves and remove from their shelves. And the list was largely targeting books that had characters that were LGBTQ+, or books about race, books about gender, books about sex ed. And these were the books that were being targeted. And I learned about a small group of librarians calling themselves the Freedom Fighters that were starting to react to this and speak out and organize. At first, it was within Texas, but it just sort of blew up, and they were getting responses from well beyond the borders of Texas. And so we started our story in Texas over 4 years ago, collaborating with those original Freedom Fighters, and started to build trust and learn about a network of librarians throughout the country. And so, and realized that it needed to be a national story rather than just a story within Texas.
2021, how does this connect to the pandemic and school shutdowns? And is there a thread?
It's a great question. We believe, and from what we've learned, is that during the pandemic, there was obviously a lot of vulnerability, a lot of fear, and groups like Moms for Liberty began to really build a network based on the concept of parental rights. And that was really came out of the politicization of masking and vaccinations. You know, they were able to really organize and reach a lot of parents, a lot of moms that were concerned, understandably, about that. And when that crisis started to abate, the attention turned to the books and the culture wars. Yeah. So I think there was a very much a direct thread. And using that as a sort of wedge issue was also simultaneously evident in that same time frame of the fall of 21, when the Virginia governor's race of Glenn Youngkin was, I think, won over heavy ads around the book Beloved. It was very much hung on the idea of books and parental rights and which books were in the library, school libraries. And that was the same time we started seeing things proliferate at the same time. Texas was a catalyst with this Krauss List, but it also was happening simultaneously in Florida and many other places around that time.
One of the things I found so compelling throughout the film, The Librarians, was when librarians are talking about the books, including the trauma of having to pull hundreds of books from their library and lock them behind three locked doors so no one can get to them, or destroy them, or, you know, send them somewhere with no plan for what will happen to the books. They are directly associating that with the students, who they feel like, if I put this book in the dark, I'm putting this student in the dark. Tell me a little bit about what you heard from librarians about a book ban being more than about a physical copy of Beloved or How to Be Anti-Racist or The Lawn Boy. It's about more than that physical copy of a book. It was about a person to them, and a sanctuary of a library. What did you hear from librarians about that concept?
Well, I think that I really became much more keenly aware of the tremendous dedication and bonding between school librarians and their students, and particularly marginalized, more vulnerable students, and how fiercely they felt about defending those students and their voices and their rights. Yes, we were hearing about how much they understood boots on the ground and being in those spaces that these books really do literally save lives. And we were learning that firsthand from talking to students as well as we traversed the states that we did. But I, you know, when you think about this siege on librarians and as a storyteller, the stakes of why they would go to these lengths, clearly with subject like Suzette, who's an Army veteran in Llano, Texas, you know, her stakes in the game were also to defend the U.S. Constitution and to fight to preserve these fundamental rights of what constitutes democracy. But I was also really understanding the stakes were about saving kids and standing up for kids. So we were hearing a lot about that. And I would say that maybe I shouldn't have been shocked, but, you know, when we reached Louisiana and started to talk to Amanda Jones and learned that in her small one traffic light town, she had lost over 12 students to suicide for feeling other. And making that connection, as you referenced that one part of the film where our Texas anonymous librarian talks about being taken into a library and into a school and being shown books that were behind two locked doors and a locked cabinet that had been locked up back there out of fear. It brought to mind the idea that for me that these books were not only representative of real people, real students, but that they were like fugitives being taken with no due process and against all protocol. Because one of the things we point out in the hundreds of screenings we've done to people is confusion out there, a lot of misinformation, but that there have always been parental rights around this process of book challenges. And most of these librarians report that prior to this time period, there had been zero challenges or very few in a year, and that there's a process and a protocol to deal with that that went fairly smoothly, where our trained professional librarians understand the definitions of obscenity. They understand what is age appropriate material. And if a parent does have a problem, there's a way to challenge that and have a review and a process. But what was happening in the fall of 21 was brazenly breaking all of that protocol and First Amendment right, constitutional rights.
Yeah. You point out librarians do have a code of ethics. They are trained in age-appropriate library book selection. They're also trained in how to stand up against censorship. And perhaps some of the people who are going after the librarians weren't quite prepared for the fact that these people had also been trained in a library in the First Amendment and in the constitutional rights of readers. Help us understand, though, the real impact of these librarians' lives, the death threats, the community hatred and vitriol, the social media attacks, being called a pedophile. This takes a toll on a librarian.
Yes, when we first went to Texas and started to hear the stories, you know, you would hear the first one and the second one. These were all very, obviously, very different people, very different human beings with different personalities. But there was this through line of trauma that really struck us. They were all literally traumatized, mm-hmm. and rightly so. You know, I think it takes a minute to actually take in, or it did back then for me, as it does for, I think, viewers watching the film, that criminalizing our librarians is actually something on the table in the United States of America for doing their job. These are not people who came into this in any way as advocates. You know, the beginning of the film opens with that notion that, these are public servants that are not necessarily supposed to be seen or felt. They're not in your face kind of people to generalize. These are people who are of service. They're they tend to be fairly selfless human beings who are in this to they're in the kids business. They're in the business of loving books and loving information and helping communities. And so the idea that doing their job of what they've been trained to do in library sciences and school in their schooling and what they're trained to do, they didn't expect to be in a role of standing up for our democracy. That's book bannings have existed, obviously, and they do take courses on privacy and First Amendment rights, but these are people in it for very different reasons, but that felt because of moral conviction, their own code of ethics, their integrity, their commitment to kids. Many of them feel a responsibility to play this role in the vanguard right now.
And you mentioned this a little bit, but for people who haven't seen the film yet, we're going to give them information about how to see it in South Dakota in person at some screenings here. It's a documentary, but it's such a beautiful piece of filmmaking, and you have at your disposal that you wield so eloquently the visual language of libraries, from card catalogs to the pages of books. Tell me a little bit from as a filmmaker standpoint, when you're putting this together, almost all Americans have an experience of some kind in a library or with a bookmobile. And that is a very great thing to tap into for visual storytelling.
Well, thanks. My team and I thought for years now about how to cinematically make this come to life, both as an investigative piece. I think it's very compelling, frightening, but compelling in terms of what we uncover dramatically. But visually, I thought a lot about the books themselves and how to sort of render certain books and these beautiful quotes. Of the books that we cherish, all of those books that are quoted in the film have been banned at one point or are now. And we thought a lot about the archival material that would be a mix between cultural references in cinema history. There were so many, it was so much fun collecting them and deciding which ones ended up in the film, but also just the black and white archival images that for me were intended to juxtapose this very kind of Andy Griffith era or whatever era those came from, this very innocent associations most of us have with, of all places, libraries becoming political battlegrounds was not something that had existed, I think, in when I grew up, for sure. And this is sort of American pie. What could be more sort of small town American innocent than the librarian and the library? So we wanted images that reminded people of that to juxtapose against this crazy dystopian idea that they are under the threat of criminalization and, as you say, death threats and horrible attacks online, not just online. It's not just the librarians. We would hear about things that aren't in the film, school board trustees who have dead animals put on their doorstep. I mean, it's just become so unthinkable. So yes, there have been, and some of the worst is also going after family members, kids. That's when you realize these people aren't paid. This is, being on the school board, or I mean, yes, librarians, it's a profession, but when the stakes get that high, it's a lot to ask people to go out on a limb and to see the heroism of the people in our film who choose to do that.
The students in the film also, they have read Fahrenheit 451. They have seen a book burning during World War II in Nazi Germany. They have also a language to talk about censorship in their own lives, and they are also speaking up. Students are doing that too. What did you hear from them about their role in supporting librarians and demanding their rights to read?
We didn't get to put all of that into the film, but we have met many amazing youth activists along the way. We're utilizing a lot of that in our impact campaign. We have a very robust impact campaign that we're developing over 2026 that is working in tandem with certain youth activists. But we learned that this kind of false paradigm that's been fo put forth by the book banning side about indoctrination as opposed to representation. This idea that kids are, there's this kind of code in some of these books to indoctrinate kids to, in terms of to be confused about their sexuality, is just so out of touch, mainly in a world that we're living in now with the internet and all of those things. I mean, we mainly learned, I learned that kids, all kinds of things about empathy, learning empathy, if they aren't, either being represented, in the case of a book like New Kid, about a black student who is in a majority white school and some of the feelings they might have around that. It creates empathy for those who are not that voice, and obviously gives a feeling of less isolation and representation for those voices who are being depicted in the books. So that is not lost on a lot of kids, and dire for the kids that need the representation or the feeling of not being alone, or maybe they're in a household where they can't talk about certain things. What was particularly offensive to me is this guise of certain books being classified as having obscenity. A book like Beloved, or books that have sexual assault that are not intended for the fifth grade, and nobody's putting them there, but that they're age-appropriate books, maybe being put on the upper high school shelves that have been there for a long time, that have challenging material. But I would hear from young women, look, this teaches us what consent looks like and what it doesn't look like. Those kids we know can access on their phone every day of the week actual pornography anytime they want at this point, kids that age. But this is literature that depicts things in much more nuanced and in sophisticated ways.
What's next in this conversation, do you think? We're talking 2021. Here we are in 2026. It's an issue in the South Dakota State Legislature talking about censorship and what should be in the hands of our children. I'm sure in other state legislatures there are still debates in other libraries. What do you see is coming up ahead in this national conversation?
Well, one of the reasons I think that this issue is so top of the line and should be for so many Americans is because it represents so much more than, censorship in general is an attack on our democracy, our freedom of expression, our freedom to information. But I see it like a lot of other issues that it hangs in the balance right now. On one hand, we're seeing some very troubling and concerning things, as you said, about certain laws that would continue to threaten to criminalize librarians, to take our books off the shelves, to erase our history. All of those things are terribly concerning. But on the other hand, I think what we are leaning into is some hopeful signs. First of all, the film itself, has been in over 200 theaters with repeated art house cinema runs with sold out screening, especially in the heartland, especially in places like where you're sitting. That's really, really tells me something other than that we hope we made a good and compelling film. But we're also seeing that, there was this recent election that was lost in Texas by someone who's actually appears in our film, who is more extremist on this side. And what we think it indicates is that a vast majority of the public is not really one with the idea of taking down public education, which we reveal in the film is really one of the things that is organized well-funding and underneath all of this, or a threat that we would have no separation of church and state in our, you know, what is this really about? Mm-hmm. And so we're heartened by that, and we're heartened by the impact campaign that we are launching that really encourages hyper-local civic engagement, which we see can, we've learned through the film, has affected school board races. It can really help. People do have agency around this issue in their specific locales.
Yeah. We're going to put some links up to all the resources that people can find about the film and help people find the screenings. There's a lot we're not talking about because there's some such powerful moments in the film that brought me to tears, but I just really want to leave those for the film goers to experience on their own terms without spoiling them. But thank you for them. I think you know a few of the ones, especially at the end, there's a big reveal that I'm still emotional about. So, but thank you for spending your time with us today as well.
And I'm so excited that this will be coming to audiences in South Dakota by way of the community screenings that I know are in place and our broadcast on PBS's Independent Lens on February 9th.
The Librarians airs on SDPB February 9th at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can join SDPB for free screenings of the film across the state in February and March. That includes screenings in Spearfish on February 12th, Rapid City and Aberdeen on February 19th, Huron on February 24th, and Custer on February 25th. You can go to sdpb.ticketbud.com for details about screenings of The Librarians and learn more about the Impact campaign and local civic engagement on the film's website. That's thelibrariansfilm.com. That's our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.